One parent says to their child, okay, you just came in from the mud outside. Now take off your shoes at the door. What I tell you about tracking in mud, this is not a barn with barnyard animals coming in and out. And wash your hands. I saw you get your hands dirty. Another parent says to their child, I'm glad you had fun outside playing. And it is muddy out there. And it's good that we take off our shoes and wash our hands when we come in. So thanks in advance for doing that. Do you have an opinion on which approach is better for parenting? Before finalizing an opinion like me, you probably want to know which scenario got results and had the kid take off the shoes and wash the hands. And we know there's more at stake. In human interactions, we impact one another. Today we explore living out our UU values in parenting and in grandparenting and in caregiving of children. We take this exploration within the framework of our monthly theme of curiosity. And for folks who are not parents or grandparents or caregivers of children, at first glance this may seem less important to you. However, many of the issues and ideas in this sermon really apply to how we relate to one another as human beings in general. Parenting can bring powerful joy and transformational blessings. Parenting can bring heavy worry and crushing heartbreak. During my wife Kristen's first pregnancy, I began to realize that for most important questions about parenting, you have intelligent, thoughtful, experienced people who disagree strongly with one another on almost every question. Should a newborn infant sleep in the bed with the parents? Some say no, due to the risk of a deeply sleeping parent rolling over on the infant. Some say yes, due to the value of loving, direct contact, and ease of breastfeeding. How long should one allow an infant or toddler to cry in the crib before coming to comfort? Until what age should the infant or toddler be allowed to suck on the pacifier? This was a big one in our house with Ellis. The big timeline of the binky question. It is tough to cut that binky. It was for it was very, very heartbreaking to take away that binky. Cut it so it can't suck on it anymore. If you've been a part of that, it doesn't have any suction anymore when you cut it. How much screen time should parents allow their children? This is intense debate in America. And of course, my mother still says she's traumatized by the way her in-laws judged her about the poor timeline she had in potty training me. And I'm 51 and she still shakes. It was so difficult with your grandma. She thought I was a terrible mother. And, of course, the blessings and challenging of parenting never end. When children become adults, there are so many tough questions. How to do the serenity prayer with them. Where are the healthy lines between loving support and unhelpful enabling? Those are some of the toughest questions that I sit and listen with parents and grandparents on, because there are no easy answers in many cases. And I grew cautious in my parenthood and in my ministry in developing and expressing opinions on such matters. It became very clear pointing one finger has about many coming back at me, and it certainly is a highlight of my belief that I'm right about 30% of the time. So I just really tried to develop listening skills to accompany people. People care deeply, and most of us have sensitivities, don't want to feel judged. So exploring these topics, I thought this month with open-hearted curiosity seems helpful. Because, and as in so many areas of life, following children's examples can guide us to be curious about new or different ways of seeing things, understanding the world. Sophia Lyons Foss, the first female Unitarian minister, became the editor of Parents Magazine in 1944. Influential to this day. You can trace the roots of her philosophies and ideas to stuff that's being taught in many parts of the country and the world today. She was in a pioneering group. She had controversial opinions in the 40s, including children are actually spiritual witnesses and guides unto themselves. And to this day, it's as important as ever to explore parenting with UU principles and purposes as she did. We ask ourselves, how to parent with a focus on affirming and promoting the first principle, the inherent dignity and worth of every person. Traditional Christian theologies teach that due to Adam and Eve, this is very similar to Pandora, by the way, this one. Adam and Eve gave in to the temptation, but in this line of thinking, the Christian thinks everyone became a sinner or falling short of the glory of God. So the theology of parenting was imbued with that. And UU theology teaches that each and every person is a child of God or has the spark of the divine or has each and every child have inherent dignity and worth. So parenting with this focus involves naming and nurturing this belief in the essential goodness of every person. This is true and should be true even when people make harmful mistakes. We can still lean in on the positive because we know words describe and create reality for all of us, including our children. Words describe and create our reality. At a recent Undoing Racism training here with our interfaith group Power, Dr. Kim Richards said, "Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will shape your reality." And this is true in parenting for the first principle. One parenting practice, which has different variations, involves naming five positive things for every one negative thing that happens. I've found this very difficult. You know, sometimes you have to say, like, good you're eating your peas. Good you're eating your vegetables. Good you're eating your peas. Okay, I got my three in. Now, I'm going to name this problem. But it's true. It enhances the first principle. Thanks for treating your sister with kindness. I noticed and appreciate how much you gave care to practicing your cello. Thanks for eating your vegetables. And then you can name the problem in a clear way and move on. And this affirming and encouraging in the children, it builds the positive self-esteem and the self-image the child has of itself. And I do this entire sermon knowing there are many of you out there more expert both in ideas and experience of doing these things than I. Also, another wonderful set of sections of this book are how to enliven the first principle through regular family rituals, daily, weekly, monthly family rituals, and how to celebrate holidays together, uplifting the first principle. We ask how to parent with focus on affirming and promoting the third principle. Principles, by the way, are hung around on the banners. There's four on four. Third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement for spiritual growth. One good focus is the parent starting to work on their own spiritual health, self-reflective questions such as, what are some of my biggest strengths as a parent? I can do that without being arrogant. Or a grandparent, or a son, or a daughter. What scares me? What really scares me? What pushes my buttons? Honestly, what pushes my buttons? We know, kids observe and are more likely to emulate what the adult does versus what the adult says. So putting this together, for example, when I'm in the kitchen trying to do many tasks very quickly, I know I am very sensitive to extra noise. So when it gets extra noisy, I have to kind of work it through and not respond with extra noise to fight the noise. Just kind of ask, is it possible for us to turn down the radio? Is it possible for us to lower our voice instead of, you know, just ratchet, and then that's not going a good direction. Because parents developing deeper self-knowledge helps the child to have the wherewithal to do the same. And this connects with spiritual practices, whatever you may have. It could be meditation, it could be riding your bicycle, it could be gardening. But these things that help us connect with the miracle of life and to kind of fill our batteries, we can talk about that with our kids in some way. Just share, I do that. I don't know if you know that's partly what I'm doing when I do that. And then maybe see, there are a lot of wonderful ways for kids to have spiritual practice for themselves. Help your child find one that works for them. You know, not the boilerplate one that does not work for them and just keep pushing at them. No, find one that works for your child. Help them find it. Spiritual growth involves embracing good enough parenting, good enough, versus working to constantly be the best or the perfect parent, which we know does not exist, and the idea sets us up for failure. Perfectionism is not spiritual growth. We ask how to parent with focus on affirming and promoting the fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And this, a lot of these ideas just connect in a pretty small circle. With an open, loving heart, we can experience teachable moments through the course of every day. We can say, that's a good question. And let's see if we can find an answer together. And you can just bring that spirit to the interactions. You don't have to say those exact sentences every time, but say, I'm glad you're thinking about that. How can I help you find the answer for you to that? And when we're doing that from an approach, it can be counterintuitive, but you have more weight to get with the kids. You have more leverage to explore some of the other principles like justice and equity and human relations. When you see a situation that doesn't seem right, a person's getting the short end of the stick in society, you can explore that with a kid, name maybe, hey, that's how some of our principles are not being lived out or are being lived out in society. You can explore the eighth principle, which we are exploring as a congregation, and many of us are promoting, including myself, which is being advocates and fiercely committed to work against racism and other oppressions at every level of our lives. You know, when I'm open-hearted, or you're open-hearted, we can probably make more headway on fighting racism than when I'm the know-it-all, and I tell you all the answers ahead of time, even though you might already know. Those are good for parenting, I think. So now I'm going to give you, I've been real nervous about this for many months. This is the Reverend Kent special on the Kent's special ingredient to throw in for parenting for progressive and liberal parents. I'm going to call it tough love. The tough love ingredient, and I'm saying this honestly with a lot of humility. I'm curious about why liberal and progressive parents in the last decades seem to be hesitant at times with tough love or what I'll call discipline. And it seems to me that at times times we, as parents, dwell too much on doing what the kid says they want. It's probably better in some of our cultures, it seems to me. I wonder if we'd benefit if we increased, when we say no, we mean no. Sometimes, you know, if you say no 7 times and they keep doing it, they K-N-O-W, that N-O means nothing. If they get to keep doing it after 7 no's, no's means nothing. And I think we probably should either not say no or say it and mean it more, because it just helps them in their development, including someday when they get a job. The boss says no, it probably means no. And you could have learned that from your parents. This is a tough one, but I'm going to say it. I believe sometimes the reality is just children, and I'll bet this is true for many other animals in the kingdom, baby animals, kids are simply selfish and irrational. Kids are simply selfish and irrational. This is not contrary to them having inherent dignity and worth. Okay? I think, and please share with me your thoughts on this, is connected to children. Children's selfishness and irrationality can manifest as a result of still developing frontal cortex of the brain, an insufficient amount of trial and error, meaning not enough experience in life. And at times, adults do better simply to accept the reality that we are the next ones up in the generational line of needing to be in charge and decision-making for young people. And we have to just sometimes make a healthy, pragmatic decision. And at times, this one does not really... Why? Why can't we do that? Because I said. At times, it's okay for that to be the answer. It's okay for the parents to say, because I said. Let me know your thoughts on that one. I'm interested if that gets anywhere close to 50% agreement. Now, of course, this is a fine line. And blessedly, the tables can turn oh so quickly with children at any age, but especially when they're growing into teenagers. Right now, in our country, many teenagers are leading with critical, life-saving movements to stop gun violence, violence against women, to curb carbon emissions. Teens are saying that to the adults, time is up. You have been irrational and selfish, and we're done with you. So that parenting calls for being humble and saying, yeah, you're right. We haven't been good enough on gun violence or violence against women or carbon emissions, and we got to follow you now. So this is all true, and it's nuanced. There's deep poignancy for me in exploring UU parenting on a day when we will celebrate the life of Nancy Dearden. Nancy Dearden was a tremendously dedicated, effective mother, member of the community. She was fiercely dedicated with love and organized her family and the community for love and empowerment. So I want to raise her up, because in beloved community, we get to watch each other and have mentors. And Nancy was a mentor to me in parenting. Here in beloved community, we benefit from embracing the beginners, the child's mind. When we embrace not knowing all the answers with enthusiasm, we become better people, better parents, better grandparents, better caregivers. And it's just good to be together, because we know no matter what, when we're parenting or doing other things, we're instilling values in people. So it's good to be mindful about what those are and do it with an excitement about what might be around the corner in the journey. Blessings be. Amen.